Hello and welcome to another Trev and Ben podcast. Although this isn't just any old another podcast, is it, Ben?
No, this is an M&S podcast. What are you talking about, Trev?
Well, it's episode 300.
Hey! We made it.
We did, but it's also our last for a little while.
No.
We'll tell you more about that a little bit later on. But let's celebrate we've got this far. 6 years and 300 episodes of this absolute nonsense.
You really let the air out of the tyres there. I was along for the ride. I was celebrating the journey. And then you just came along and just, congratulations. It's finished. It's done.
I'm like a god, you know. I give and I take away. It's the power that I have. It's the power I wield over humankind. Because really, when you think about it, I am just a disembodied voice that talks to people once a week. So it is. I am like a god. All right, it is. No, and you're sort of like the some sort of heavenly minion that that I got involved.
You know what, considering over the last few years you've called me a Nazi, a fascist, a racist, I'll take heavenly being or whatever it was, heavenly minion, I'll take that. That's quite an improvement. So yeah, that's good.
I mean, it is because of all those things that you are, racist, Nazi, that you're a minion. That's why you haven't been elevated to status of a god yet.
See, I think you're a god because you're the one who does all the hard work editing this podcast for hours. I just turn up on the day and go home again. That's fine.
I'd be a really shit god. I would because I just think I can't be bothered. I mean, imagine like all the people praying to you every day, I want this, I want that. Mind you, I think the real god doesn't bother anyway, so I wouldn't be any different.
I should just also point out for the record, in case anyone should stumble across this for the first time, if this is your first listen, I'm just for the record, I'm not a Nazi or a fascist or a homophobe. Trev's just really mean to me, and I don't know why.
Well, no, I think if you go back and listen to the 300 episodes, draw your own conclusions. Yeah, do you remember that episode where, you know, you went on a rant about wanting to create the Fourth Reich? Do you remember that?
I haven't listened to all of them, Trev. My memory's not what it used to be.
300 episodes, Ben, which I think is quite a landmark to have reached, considering when we started 6 years ago, we were licking our wounds, having been booted off the radio, not really knowing what the hell we were going to be doing, and thought, well, let's dip our toes once again, because we had done it before, once again into the podcast world. And we sort of floundered about for a few weeks, not really finding our feet, not sure what to do. And then we sort of thought, well, actually, why don't we just sort of talk bollocks as we used to do on the radio? And we sort of lost that little bit of, I don't know, confidence maybe to do that. And then we think we discovered it again. That's not for us to judge.
We hope so. And we hope that, you know, we're not gone forever. Don't worry. But we do hope that, if you listen to this and get any sort of enjoyment, or if it helps you pass the time or kills an hour or just kills 10 minutes, we hope that's something. Yeah, that's it, really.
Well, 300 is a big old number, Ben, and it's an important number. Lots of things like 300 is a flawless game of tenpin bowls, isn't it?
It is. 300
points. So that's almost like a perfect score. It's like we've reached the perfect score when it comes to the podcast world, doesn't it?
So what would be if you fluffed the last ball? I mean, would that be a 299? I don't quite know how bowling scores work. Because a strike is 10 points, right?
I suppose so. I don't really know how bowling works. I can't remember.
I don't know, because there's a bit of pressure on this one, because it is the 300th, but we could still fuck it up. And that would be like, with the final ball, you knock down 9 out of 10 pins. So it's, even though you've recorded 300, the last one was a bit shit, so it doesn't fully count.
Yeah, they've all been a bit shit. the 300 Club is a club in Antarctica, and you earn that title by experiencing a 300 degree Fahrenheit temperature difference from a 200 degrees Fahrenheit sauna to minus 100 degrees Fahrenheit outside. I don't know why you do that. I don't know why you want to do that.
Incredibly dangerous.
Are you in the nude when you do that? Can you put some clothes on?
I mean, I'm no scientist, but if your body went at a temperature sort of differential of 300 degrees very, very quickly, wouldn't that induce some sort of fatal shock or something? I don't know. It doesn't sound like a good idea to me. Don't try it. If that's what you're thinking, I would advise you not to try it.
I've seen things where people go into the cold water in sort of Iceland and those sort of places, and they go into a sauna, or they come out of a hot bath then go into cold water. So, I mean, it's a thing they do. It's supposed to be good for you. It's supposed to be like character form. It's the sort of thing, you know, if you... When they bring back national service, Ben, and let's hope that's very soon, when young people will be taught some character. And it's a sort of, you know, good cold showers. Go into good cold showers and then perhaps into a warm room afterwards. I wouldn't even bother with that. Cold showers, go outside, roll around in some mud and get shot at.
The closest I've ever come, I think, to the 300 club would be when I've hard-boiled an egg and I shock it in ice bath after to stop the cooking process.
I mean, it's so middle class. I mean, I thought you were going to say, like, the closest you've got, because the closest I've got to the 300 club is getting out of the bath in the middle of winter with no heating on in the house. That's probably the closest I've got to the 300 club. You know, you do the little walk between the bathroom and the bedroom, shivering.
No, for me, it's definitely plunging a hot... hard-boiled egg into freezing cold ice water to stop the cooking process. Yeah.
So it's not even you that's a member of the 300 Club, it's the egg.
Yeah, but I was there. I assisted the process. I helped an egg do it.
So you sort of you're a member of the 300 Club just because you've dipped an egg in some ice?
Essentially, yes.
Okay. If you had 300 £1 coins... You'd have £300 to start with, but they would weigh roughly...
Whoa, hang on a minute. Where did you get that fact from?
Yeah, but no, here's the interesting bit. By the way, these facts are coming from ChatGPT. Giselle Petrie-Turner has given me these facts. I asked her for some interesting facts about the number 300, and this is one that she's put in there that she thinks is interesting. 300 £1 coins would weigh roughly 2.7 kilograms. So, it's about as much as a small cat, probably.
I think I'm going to forget that information immediately.
Here's another one she said. Now, this is quite interesting. In Chinese astronomy, 300 was used to symbolise completeness in instruction, meaning that if you sort of learned 300 things, you were basically a genius.
I don't really get that.
It depends. Like, is it 300 things about one particular... subject? Because, you know, we all know 300 things, don't we?
I know in order, by the way, I'm not trying to flex, in order from 1 to 300, I know the sequence of numbers to get from 1 to 300. One, two.
Yeah, then let's not do the whole the whole thing.
But does that make me a genius?
Well, because you can count to 300.
Well, that's memorising 300 different things on one particular subject. Numbers.
Yeah, I don't know if that makes that. Of course, that doesn't make you a genius.
Well, that's what they're claiming. This is my point. I agree.
So you think you have completeness in instruction when it comes to numeracy is what you're claiming, because you can count to three. Can you count beyond 300?
I can. I can put 3, 4, 5, 6. Yeah,
again, I think we'll take it as. I mean,
I can prove it.
We could do it and just let you count. This whole episode could just be you counting until...
Do you remember what I said about missing that final shot on the bowling? That would be, if this podcast ends with me counting to 300, that would really be us shitting the bed on the final episode.
I mean, we really have run out of ideas then. Welcome to the 300th and final episode for now of the Trev and Ben podcast. And this week, Ben's just going to count. In Roman marriage law, a man could be fined 300 asses... Now, apparently, that doesn't mean, like, the animal. It means the coin. I know I've never heard of an ass as a coin in the Roman world, but I may be wrong. But for certain civil violations, that means sort of being rowdy in public, drunk and disorderly. You'd have to be fined 300 asses.
I mean, who has 300 asses?
Well, as I say, it's a coin. It's not
but it's
animal.
The coin.
It'd be better. Well, I wonder how much they weigh.
Well, I imagine, obviously, probably the equivalent of 300 pounds, which, as we all know, Trev, is 2.7 kilograms, which is the size of a small cat.
That's quite an assumption to make that an ass is the same as a pound. Yeah.
You're telling me that 300 asses don't weigh the equivalent of a small cat?
What if it was the animal? 300 asses would weigh a lot more than a cat. If it was
but
the animal,
then I'll return you to my original question. Who has 300 asses?
An ass farmer, I suppose.
Something else while we're talking about.
I think Kim Kardashian's probably been through about 300 by now.
Well, since you mentioned the Romans, in Roman numerals, the number 300 is CCC.
Oh, yes. Yes.
There you go.
There's another bit of...
pointless information.
Can you count to 300? Can you count to 300 in Roman numerals?
Absolutely not. That I can't do.
Because that could be like a bonus episode.
Oh, God, that'd be exhausting. Well, I think people can tell we're running low on ideas already. This is why the podcast is ending.
In some forgotten legends, 300 is the number of times the moon blinked before realising it was being watched. Now, I know nothing else other than that, but I like that idea, that the moon blinked.
What does that
mean? It was being watched.
I've got to get to the bottom of that. That sounds incredibly sinister, like... So the moon, they're insinuating the moon is some sort of living, all-seeing eye, which stopped blinking when it noticed we were watching it?
I suppose so. And ever since it realised that we were watching it, it's not blinked because it obviously can't trust us. That's what I'm getting from that. The moon, once it had done its 300 blinks, it then noticed that we were watching it. And thought, well, I can't take my eye off you. I cannot take my eyes off of you because I do not trust what you are up to.
Thing is, I'd like to know more about that, but I know you don't have any more information. So we're going to have to leave that there. I'm going to have to look it up afterwards to find out the answers. And no one's ever going to get to hear it. So what frustrating listening this is.
Well, let's find out now. Can you ask your Giselle Petrie-Turner to elaborate on that a little bit more?
Okay, Trev. Well, basically, I've asked Giselle to explain it.
Yeah.
And she agrees. It's a very sort of eerie line. And she basically says that there is no exact official legend or reasoning behind it. And it just seems like it is meant to say something symbolically. And then Giselle just goes on to sort of guess at why. So it doesn't seem like there is an official answer, but it is quite an eerily poetic sentence. So I do quite like it for that reason.
I think it's the sort of thing that you could say to, like, your grandchildren to make you sound like, you know, some sort of old sage. And you don't need to explain it. You know, like those sort of things, those sort of sayings that grandparents have, you could just, when your child's playing up a little bit, you could say, remember little Ben, the moon blinked 300 times before it realised it was being watched.
There is a
if
thin
you say
line.
It like that, it's like, what comeback have you got?
Well, I was just going to say there is a very thin line between sounding like you say a wise old sage or... God, Grandpa needs his medication again.
Isn't it time we went to a home?
Oh, he's talking bollocks again. He's off again. Anything else on the 300 list?
I'll finish with this one. When we're born, we pretty much have 300 bones. But as you grow, the bones fuse so that ultimately we end up with 206.
I did know that, but I didn't know it was a nice, neat 300 to begin with. And when you said sort of about 300... I think you've kind of crowbarred that fact in to make it fit. I don't think that's true that we start with exactly 300.
That's what it's telling me.
I think that's bollocks. Can you fact check that? Because I think you have crowbarred that in. You may have been duped. Giselle might have duped you. I'll give you that. But I'm willing to believe if you Google it, we almost certainly aren't born with exactly 300 bones. I know they fuse and we have less.
Yeah.
But... What's the... Go on. What does Google say?
Babies are born with approximately 270 to 300 bones. So 300 is the top limit. So let's go with it, that we all have 300 bones. And I think it's good to have a few spare. Anyway.
But yeah, this doesn't count. What a disappointment. To end this segment on such a bullshit fact, because you're quite the completionist. You like big round numbers. That's why we're finishing on 300. I was happy to finish weeks ago.
I know.
But if we said this show will finish at the 300th, and then I said at episode 270, well, it's between 270 and 300. That's good enough. You wouldn't have accepted that.
Well, I mean, what do you want me to do? Do you want me to do do you want me to start x-raying babies and counting bones to work it out? I mean... It's quite a big job for me to undertake, to be honest.
That your final fact on the 300 fact segment is one that is not completely correct. It doesn't involve the number 300. It covers between 270 and 300.
Yeah, 300 is the top limit, though, isn't it? 300 is there. It's in there.
So it never goes over that?
Never goes over that. Never, ever.
You're certain of that?
Absolutely. Never Fox. Has you're... a human been born with more than 300 bones. In fact, if you're born with more than 300 bones, you burst out like alien. Now, Ben, one of the things that I've really enjoyed doing on the podcast over the years, and I think is one of our most popular things that we've done, because a lot of people have talked to us about it, is the would you rather questions.
Yes, they're always good fun. I like a little conundrum. It's always good fun.
All right, so I've got some for you. You ready?
I'm ready.
Would you rather fight one horse-sized duck or 100 duck-sized horses?
Oh, the classic.
The classic one horse-sized duck question.
The truth is, I do love my animals, and I wouldn't want to hurt or fight any of them. But I guess if I'm in a situation where I have to... thing is, horses are killing machines, man. But Mrs. Ben is a...
Yeah, but if they're duck-sized...
Mrs. Ben loves her horses.
I mean, look, I'm not... I don't want to go into sort of cruelty on animals, but you could kick a few duck-sized horses. Do you know what I mean? You could kick them up. See, I think I'd rather take on the 100 duck-sized horses. I think one horse... And imagine the beak on a horse-sized duck.
Yeah, that'll mess you up. I've had a peck from a duck before, and they can sting. And if it was horse-sized, you'd be in trouble. Oh, God. Do I have to fight? Could I opt for the... horse-sized ducks? No.
Right.
What was it?
Well, yeah, there's one horse-sized duck or 100 duck-sized horses.
I'll go for 100 duck-sized horses.
Right.
And then I'll take a small dinghy into the middle of a lake and just sit there.
Right. So you're just running from the duck-sized... You're not fighting them. You're going to sit until what? Until they give up and go away?
I don't want to hurt anything, but I think I'd probably... I'd rather, if gun to my head, I'd rather take on 100 duck-sized horses than one horse-sized duck.
Yeah, what about you? I think you could boot away a few duck-sized horses. The one thing about taking on one horse-sized duck is if you were to conquer that animal and bring it down, that's one head of a meal you've got there, isn't it? Imagine that.
I don't eat duck.
Oh, if it was horse-sized, there's a lot. You could feed a lot of starving people with one horse-sized duck. You could... what's the sauce you put with it? I mean, you could do one large duck a la orange, but you could do the barbecue duck with... Was it hoisin sauce?
Hoisin sauce, usually in a duck pancake with a little bit of cucumber. I've eaten duck in the past, and the problem I have is it is delicious, but just on a moral principle, I'm not a vegetarian, I'm not a vegan, I just on principle refuse to eat duck because I love them. I'd have to donate the meat to a Chinese restaurant or something, but
King.
Why would the king want a giant dead duck?
He's too busy eating the swans, isn't he? He doesn't want a fucking big duck for. But, you know, he could give it to the minions in the palace. That's what I'm thinking. Because if you'd be a bit like the, like St. George. You've taken on the dragon. If you've taken down a big old duck that's been terrorising the nation, you've taken it down. You present the corpse of the horse-sized duck to the king. He's very grateful, probably gives you some sort of honour. And then he will share the spoils with his court.
Also, I know how social media works. I know how the news works. If I go down in history as the arsehole... Do you remember that one time we had that magnificent super-sized duck? And who... It was Ben Harmer that got in a fight with it and killed it. What a prick.
Thing is, we don't have to kill it. It's not asking you to kill it in the question.
Just give it a slap.
Just asking you to fight it. So we just have to... You just got to knock it out, probably. Then it can be taken by the RSPCA to some sort of recuperation centre and live life on some sort of farm for the rest of its natural existence.
So I think I'd take on the duck-sized horses.
Okay, I'm taking on the horse-sized duck. I'm going for it.
Okay. And have you got a strategy there?
I'd probably, well, first things first, lasso the beak shut. You know, like Steve Irwin used to get a crocodile and just make sure you tape the mouth shut. So you've got to do that with the beak. So that's the first thing, right? A duck's only got two legs. So you've only got to take one of the legs out, right? So, you know, probably just sort of, just go in and kick the legs to start with.
Yeah, but you probably from a horse-sized one, because you get quite a nasty flap.
You've got to take it from behind.
do you want to reword that? Or?
You go in, because it can't kick backwards, a duck, can it? I don't think I've ever seen a duck's leg move backwards. So
God, I thought my reputation was going to be damaged. At least I'm not boasting about taking it from behind.
And take the duck's leg out. Then it's scuppered. Then you can clip its wings. So clip the wings.
This conversation's making me very upset.
And then roast it.
No.
Right. Let's move on. Let's leave the ducks behind. Would you rather be able to teleport, but only to places you've never been, or time travel, but only forward 1 hour?
Time travel for 1 hour, 100%.
Really? You wouldn't want to teleport to places that you've never been? You could then go and investigate anywhere in the world.
I'm assuming that I can time travel back, right?
I guess so.
Easy. Time travel forward, 1 hour, get the lottery numbers, done.
So you're using it just for some financial gain?
Anytime you ask me any sort of would you rather, or how would you improve humanity, or what would you do in a second dimension, I always manipulate it to benefit myself in some way.
I know, it's always basically to get the fucking lottery numbers, isn't it? That's basically all you think about is to get lottery numbers. Because I don't see apart from that, I mean, it would be nice to do something to if you had some sort of medical procedure booked, if you could time travel an hour so that you're basically, it's done. When you arrive in that hour ahead, it's done, and you don't have to go through it, essentially. That would be quite a good thing, wouldn't it?
That would be good, although presumably for a serious medical intervention, you might be rendered unconscious anyway, which would make it a bit of a waste of time.
True, yes.
Here's a weird question. If you were to say, I'm just going out for next week's lottery numbers. I'll be going for ahead of an hour. I'll be back in a second.
Yeah.
And within that hour, you died. You crossed the street or hit by a car. Mm. If you skip that hour into the future, are you then dead and can't come back? Because you'd be, if you skipped an hour into the future, but you were going to die 30 minutes later, is that reversible?
No, I don't think it is. If you're in the future, it's physically you are now in the future. So physically you die in the future.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any coming back from that, is there?
How many times as well would it be reported that local man from East Grinstead has won the lottery for the fourth time? How long before I start getting investigated by this committee of people?
Oh, so you're doing it more than once. You're not happy to just go ahead once and get the lottery ticket numbers. You're going to do it on multiple occasions.
Well, why wouldn't you? I mean, why wouldn't you?
I just feel that it might be better to use that sort of ability to travel to the future for better things. Once you've got the money, I'm not saying don't do that, but if you've got £10 million, is that not enough?
I wasn't going to tell you this because you've been calling me all the names under the sun, but I was actually going to win a few extra million and give some to you. But you can go swivel as far as I'm concerned. You're not getting a penny.
I'm too busy teleporting around to places I've never been before. So,
do you get to pick where you teleport to?
I don't know. It just says teleport, but to places you've never been. So I'm guessing that you can pick. But even if you can't, that would be a great thing. You could just sort of. The only thing is, if you don't know where you're going, it could teleport you into the middle of a war zone.
Yes. And how overbearingly specific is it? Like, if I said, I've never been to Texas, but I'd love to go there and try some of the barbecue food and see some of the local culture and things like that, would they say, no, you've been to America before, that breaches the conditions? So, how specific is it? Like,
well, it says to places, so it doesn't... It's, it,
America is a place, Trev.
Yeah, but it's not saying just to countries. Like, it's, you know, it's not saying just because you've been to America, that doesn't, you know, there are lots of places in America. Like, America isn't just one place.
I tell you why you're so wrong and I'm so right. You want to do the hour into the future for the lottery numbers because I've got the checkmate for your stupid choice.
Yeah.
All right, so you've gone to pick your place. I'll even let you pick. Where are you teleporting to, Trev?
I'm going to go to Canada.
Oh, lovely choice. Fantastic place. Lovely people, polite, friendly,
bears.
Great, scenic, beautiful. How are you getting home?
Well, presumably I can teleport back.
Oh, whoa, 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 whoa. Steady on, son. You've been to your house before?
Ah,
I see. Have you?
Well, that's the adventure I'm now on then. Presumably, though, I could fly back home.
Yes, but now you're going to need to pay for, you're going to need to organise flights, transportation.
Yeah.
That's all very expensive.
Yeah.
Whereas I could just win the lottery every week and go there first class.
Okay, all right. Well, I can go with the money that you're winning for me. That's fine. Right, here's another one. Would you rather live in a house that constantly whispers secrets or one that occasionally floats into the air? Depends on the secrets, doesn't it? I mean, what sort of... Is it sort of secrets of...
The lottery
state?
Numbers.
Yeah. Lottery numbers. You know, is it sort of... Because if it's just... like tittle-tattle, I'm not that interested. Do you know what I mean? Like, if it's just the man at number 17 wears knickers, do you know what I mean? I'm not interested.
Oh, you see, I think I would quite like that.
You like sort of a bit of local gossip. The house is basically a gossip.
So long as the secrets aren't rumours and they're actually true, because it might tell you, you know, who exactly pulled the trigger on JFK. You know, if the facts were, like, real, that would be fascinating. Who could turn that down? And wouldn't you quite enjoy knowing all the local secrets? And because then you could blackmail them.
Again, you're using this for some sort of financial gain. I mean, I'd want it to, if it was going to whisper secrets to me, and I don't know why it's having to whisper them. Is it because no one else can hear them? Because I could just go out and tell people. Why don't you just say them out loud?
Right? True.
It's whispering. The house is always whispering. But yeah, it could tell you, like, some of the greatest mysteries could be solved. If it can do that, if it can solve the greatest mysteries, if the house can whisper to me the exact details of how the universe began, then that would be amazing. Like you say, who shot JFK? What's the real story there? All those mysteries that are out there.
And also, if your house randomly starts floating up, that's going to damage pipework and foundations, and that's going to cause me a real headache. So I think that's quite an easy one. That I'd definitely rather the house whispering secrets to me.
Yeah, I don't see the point of it occasionally floating into the air. What's that achieving? Where are you going with it? Yeah, no, whisper me secrets all day long, house.
You do run the risk that it might tell you something you'd really rather not hear, like one of your parents is having an affair or something like that. That would just be sort of terrible, that you'd really rather have not known.
But that's, if you've got a house that's telling you secrets, there's always going to be jeopardy there, isn't there, that you're going to hear something you don't want to hear.
I guess so. So is that a price worth paying?
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's better than damaging my pipes, yeah.
Would you rather know the history of every object you touch or be able to talk to animals?
Talk to animals. Full stop. Animals. Move on. Next.
But wouldn't
what
you
about you?
The history of every object you touch? Wouldn't that be... Because I think like there are things that I own that you think I'd like to know the history of this. I found a thing in my house that belonged presumably to my great-grandmother that was in a cupboard. Right. And I had no idea what it was. And after some research, I discovered that it was something that you would hang meat on in front of a fire and you'd wind the thing up and it would rotate. So the meat gets cooked as it rotates.
Like a rotisserie.
Right? And you sort of think, wouldn't it be interesting to know the history of that item? What was cooked on it? Who used it?
Oh, I mean, yes, you're right. That I can see the appeal of that choice. It is fascinating. But to be able to talk to the animals, I'd take that every day.
Which animal would you want to talk to the most? A duck, I suppose.
I'd like to be able to explain to dogs that I come in peace. You don't need to bark at me. I'd like to explain to certain cats, I'm not here to harm you. You don't need to run away and jump over the fence. I'd like to explain to the geese, I'm doing nothing but sitting here feeding you, being nice. You can stop bloody hissing at me.
I know you love the ducks, right? But let's face it, geese are aggressive, right? Let's take the geese out.
That is untrue.
They're always having a pop, geese, aren't they? Like this, a goose looks at you as if to say, "Right, I'm fucking having you." And I think the goose has got too big for its beak, basically. And we need to bring the geese down a peg or two.
I will have no such thing said. The geese, the mothers are quite hissy and quite protective. Yes. And it doesn't seem to matter how long you sit there with them feeding them. They don't stop doing that, which is annoying.
I'll tell you where it went wrong. When we stopped eating them at Christmas, right? When we stopped eating geese at Christmas, they suddenly thought, right, we're cock of the north here. Do you know what I mean? The turkeys are getting killed at Christmas, not us now. So we're going to ramp up the aggression. Start killing them at Christmas again. Bernard Matthews needs to get back on the go.
I think basically I would use my ability to talk to the animals to convince them that whatever their concern about me is invalid, and they can trust me, and we can have a bit of a cuddle in a non-creepy way.
Yeah, I mean, basically, you want to talk to the animals to lure them into some sort of weird embrace.
Yeah, you're the one who talked about taking the giant duck from behind. Don't tar me with that brush.
On a war footing. I think I want to. Look, talking to animals is great. I think we even discussed this last week. Talking to animals, it would be nice to do, but if I had the choice of knowing the history of every object I touch, I mean, some of that's going to be dull as anything, isn't it? You know, some things are going to be incredibly. Imagine like every coin you touch, you're suddenly given a rundown of who's had that coin. That would become very dull. But there'd be some really interesting stuff as well. What if you get a coin and it turns out, I don't know, the king's touched it?
Well, I'd say A, so what? And B, is this a superpower that you can turn off and on? Because touching every object and knowing its entire history would be very boring very quickly. But if I could turn it on and off at will, then maybe. But if I was just bombarded with information by everything I touched, I would hate that.
Last one then. Would you rather be followed by a mariachi band that plays when you're sad or a mime that copies you when you're happy? You wouldn't want a mariachi band when you're sad, would you? Because a mariachi band, well, I suppose they cheer you up, but I think after a while, like a mariachi band would be fun and maybe cheer you up briefly, but after a while, you'd be thinking, just go away.
I'm terribly sorry, Mr. Harmer. We've just discovered that you're bankrupt and we're going to have to take away the house. Yeah, that would be grating. You'd probably end up in prison for assault on top of losing your house.
But a mime that copies you when you're happy. I mean, that's fine because it's a mime. It's not making any noise. It might get a little annoying that it's around you, but you're happy anyway. So
I know, but would it spoil your happiness if you basically had someone imitating you and essentially mocking you when you're... So every happy moment you have is slightly sullied by this sarcastic prick mimicking you.
Yeah, like your wedding, birth of a child, the mime's always there.
At least they're quiet.
Yeah, exactly.
And maybe you could instruct it to stand behind me. So you might be doing it, and I might know you're doing it, but at least I can't see you.
Yeah. So I think a mime would be a much better thing. A mariachi band, no. I mean, imagine, but although, what if it worked? Can you imagine if that became like a thing that they would prescribe for depression? You go to the doctors, you know, I think I'm depressed, doctor. They go, well, I'll prescribe you a mariachi band. Follow you around for the next 6 weeks, see how your mood is after that.
Yes, it might help. I'm not convinced, are you?
Well, what I'm saying to the medical profession is give it a go.
Yeah, so I'm just having a little look around now. I think there's a band called The Mariachis. I don't think they put too much thought into that band name. And they sing Don't You Want Me Baby.
I saw them live once, and I have to tell you, It was one of the best nights I've ever been to. It was in a pub in Crystal Palace. They were like the headline act for this charity event. They were well known because they were in the Doritos adverts.
That's right.
I think the main guys appeared on in Man Down. Do you remember that episode where the Greg Davis character always has the mariachi band playing
yes.
in his head? And I saw them live. And I've got to tell you, I mean, if I'd been in a sad mood that night, I couldn't have left unhappy.
Okay, so maybe there's something to it.
So what I'm saying is maybe with depression being a big thing right now, let's get more mariachi bands out there.
Well, with this being our final podcast, there might be you know, a handful of people who are devastated. Maybe we should finish the podcast with a burst of mariachi music.
Now, Ben, one of the things we've done on the podcast over the years, which I think I've enjoyed more than anything else, is when we've done little dramas, in particular, the murder mystery that we did a couple of years ago now.
Yes, the Wimsley Manor murder mystery series, yes.
Now, I don't know how much other people enjoyed it, but I had a great time doing it.
Me too.
So it seemed appropriate that on our final podcast for a while, we revisit the magic of Wimsley Manor.
Just a brief revisit, I think.
Yeah, just a brief revisit, just to bring those characters back to life one last time. And, I mean, who knows? It could open the door to a whole new career. This could be the last series we did of this didn't seem to open doors for us. I was hoping to get on The Archers. Not one phone call. I thought you could have gone on to do, you know, like on Radio 4, they do those sort of plays for today.
Yeah.
I thought maybe you could have got on those, you know, doing your headmistressy type voice.
Unfortunately, I don't know. Maybe the podcasting algorithms were against us that day and not many great producers in the radio industry heard it. I don't know what happened. I can't account for that.
Well, let's give it one last go. So, as always, when we did this, I've sort of put you in charge a little bit because of your relationship with Giselle Petrie-Turner, our AI friend.
Yes, we should say that whilst we are starring in the roles, this is written by Giselle Petrie-Turner.
Yeah, so if it's shit, it's basically. So I should point out that I've not seen the script. I'm going in blind. I know that you've looked at it.
I had a brief look just to make sure Giselle was behaving, and it's been nice to see all the characters brought back to life, because of course they did all have their own little personalities and, as you say, voices. So I think it'll be fun.
Should we have a little refresh of the characters?
Well, there was yourself. I think it's, yeah. Again, just before we go through the characters, I should point out that this isn't a continuation. This isn't a sequel. So just because somebody might have been the killer in the last one doesn't mean they'll be the killer again. They shouldn't be in prison. It's just sort of An alternate reality, if you want, back at Wimsley Manor.
Yeah. So the characters are...
There is, of course, Trev Smith.
That's this voice. I don't have to affect anything different for me. It's just my natural charisma that will come through.
Detective Inspector Ben Harmer, which will be myself, playing myself, using a slightly more authoritarian sternness to my normal voice, because I am a detective inspector after all.
Yes. You didn't sort of do the stereotypical, you know, policeman voice, did you? You sort of did your own sort of very stern detective
yes.
voice, I seem to remember.
Okay. Detective Inspector Ben Harmer is firm but fair.
Firm but fair, yeah.
Next, of course, we have our French artist, Jean-Pierre Leclerc.
And he is obviously very artistic. He likes to do the painting and he sounds like this.
I think his voice might have changed a bit there, but we'll gloss over that.
Well, he's become more obsessed by art and therefore I think he's become more intense.
Yes. Next we have Reverend Thorne, who I believe was one of your favourite characters. He's a rather carry-on, mischievous, very camp vicar, or reverend.
And I should say he was very loosely based on someone I used to work with.
Right.
Who didn't make the noise that I make, but he always looked like he should. So to me, he always, before he spoke, it was almost like he went, So Reverend Thorne will do that sort of noise, and then, you know, he's a bit saucy. He likes a little innuendo.
Yes, hopefully that plays out in the story. Then we have the influencer and internet celebrity Vix McAllister. I don't know why she's quite so gravelly, but that's the way I chose to play her.
Mm.
Completely the opposite is Headmistress Prudence Worthington, who is our fuddy-duddy, old fusty, strict headmistress.
Who always sounds like she should be saying, "Oh, handbag!" every time she
and
talks.
What murder mystery wouldn't be complete without our bookish and boring accountant, Arnold Whitman?
I'm not that boring, thank you very much.
And there is our cast and crew.
So there we go. It's time, once again, for Murder at Wimsley Manor.
A storm lashes the countryside. Inside Wimsley Manor, seven uneasy guests gather for an unveiling. One priceless statue, six rival egos, and a forecast of murder.
Coats on pegs, shoes wiped, I refuse to mop up after grown adults.
Noted. I'll hover an inch above the carpet, if that helps.
Let's stay civil. We're here for an unveiling, not an autopsy.
Mesame, tonight I present my masterpiece. Bust number 300. Pure marble, pure passion.
Bust number 300. Love it. Catchy. My followers will eat that up.
Oh, a fine bust always draws a crowd. I've seen smaller ones bring men to their knees.
Provided it's insured, of course. Art is heavy, liability heavier.
Please stand at least a metre away. It's worth more than your combined pensions.
How does she know what our pensions are worth? She's a nosy cow.
A storm outside. An expensive statue inside. What could possibly go wrong?
Don't jinx it, Detective. My live stream's already buffering.
And I've already lost the will to mingle.
Thunder grumbles. Candlelight flickers. The guests close in around the veiled statue. Curiosity and poor judgment in equal measure.
Oh, gather.
Why does he have to ramp up so much?
I sort of went into Yvette from Hello, Hello.
Oh, Renee. Oh, gather close. Genius deserves an audience.
You're standing rather close to the fire, my son. Passion's lovely till something catches. Happened to my cassock once. Tricky to explain.
Reverend, please.
Silence!
Do you like the dramatic...
Yeah, that's not in the script.
No, it was natural. It felt natural to do that. Okay. I may do it this time with a clap. Hang on.
Silence! At the thunder's cue, I unveil.
Oh, Jean-Pierre?
Hang on. Are you frightened by the crash or excited by it? I can't quite...
Oh, good point, yes. but the thing is, she's got such a slow voice and I've only got one two-letter word here. I don't know quite how to portray this as Vix. Okay, right, here we go.
Right, I'm going to play the crash sound effect in again. Okay, you ready?
Oh, Jean-Pierre?
He's on the floor, under the statue.
Don't touch him!
He's flatter than a hymn sung sober. Confirmed. No pulse. 99.something% deceased.
Can I just say that Arnold, as a, you know, an established accountant, wouldn't use a 99.something%. That's the first criticism I have of the script from Giselle so far.
I'm
going to change that to
I'm going to change that to confirmed, no pulse, 99.9179% deceased.
Can you be? I mean, it's a binary choice. You're either deceased or you're not. Can you be 99.something% deceased?
Well, I think if you're an accountant and not a doctor, you're not going to be certifying death. So I think it's quite possible that you can be certain someone's dead, but not absolutely.
But it's a bit like saying I'm 27% pregnant. I mean, you either are pregnant or you're not. Same thing with death.
Well, no, I've heard of stories of people waking up, you know, in the morgue before. So it can happen, Ben, is what I'm saying.
All right.
What I'm saying is, I'm almost certain that he's dead, but I am not qualified as a doctor to certify the time of death and certify that all signs of life have now been extinguished.
Fair enough. We'll just carry on. I'll just accept it then. Fine. Nobody move. Congratulations, everyone. You've turned art into evidence.
That was live. My audience just saw a murder, and half of them still didn't click follow.
Try a bit of thumbnail.
One artist crushed, one statue cracked, and six guests suddenly eager to look innocent. All right, who touched the statue before it fell?
Not me. I was filming from the stairs.
I was offering a quick blessing, lightly laid hands, nothing indecent.
I adjusted the carpet runner. Presentation matters.
I noted the pedestal's dimensions for record keeping. I admired the wallpaper and get my hands where everyone could see them.
And Jean-Pierre alone handled the cloth?
He insisted on doing everything himself. Typical artist.
Yes, very hands-on. The creative types usually are.
The bolts on this pedestal are half loose. That's sabotage. That's no accident. Or just poor workmanship. I'll write to the manufacturer.
Write to the coroner while you're at it.
Some good lines, isn't he, Trev?
I'm disappointed that Jean-Pierre's dead. I can't do the voice anymore.
I think that's for the best. Ben begins his round of motives. The others begin their alibis. Vix, you first.
He promised to sculpt me like Venus. I ended up looking like Winston Churchill. Career-ending marble.
Reverend?
He pledged a donation to the church, then spent it on gin and gossip. The only thing he ever gave me was a stiff drink and false hope.
Prudence. He painted creativity is freedom on my school wall. Freedom is detention in my book.
Arnold.
He owed me rent, invoices, and logic. And I owed him a punch in the face. But I'm a gentleman.
Everyone's got a motive. We're halfway there. Why is Trev incriminating himself? I mean, and why isn't Detective Inspector following up on this man with a motive? Why did you want to punch him in the face? That would be a good question, Detective.
I mean, there didn't seem to be any animosity between Trev and Jean-Pierre before this situation.
Okay.
Shall we confess in alphabetical order, or would you prefer a group session?
Then Trev spots something that doesn't fit. And unlike Prudence, he knows when not to straighten it.
Inspector, look, the rope near the curtains, it's tied to the cloth.
Go on.
When he pulled the cover, the rope tugged the pedestal. Down came the bust, instant encore.
So it was rigged. Someone planned the fall.
That's diabolical and good content.
Who touched the drape?
I did. It hung unevenly. I cannot abide a wonky curtain.
She gave it a good tug. I was impressed by the technique.
God. Right. Then that's our trigger. You straightened the rope. He pulled it. It fell.
I meant symmetry, not slaughter.
Unfortunately, the marble didn't know the difference.
Prudence Worthington, I'm afraid you're...
About to get a stiff sentence, spiritually speaking, of course.
Thank you, Reverend. Yes, under arrest for manslaughter by good housekeeping. Now, again, not to tear holes into Detective Inspector Ben Harmer, I'm not sure that's a crime. I haven't seen that one in the Pace, yeah, section one, manslaughter by good housekeeping.
Well, I think manslaughter's a crime.
By good housekeeping? I'm not sure. Well, I'm not sure the police are sarcastic when they nick you for manslaughter, are they?
Well, I mean, if you've done a bit of cleaning, let's say, and you've moved a heavy bust and it was to fall on someone's head and kill them, that's manslaughter by good housekeeping, isn't it?
Also, it was Trev who had to point all this out. Trev, so far, seems a more competent detective than Detective Inspector Ben Harmer.
Well, obviously, I mean, that's because I have the skills needed.
Lightning fades. The guests breathe again. Justice, it seems, has been served. A little prematurely.
I'll appeal on grounds of taste.
And I'll preach, thou shalt not decorate to death, or at least use softer furnishings.
I'll post the headline, Bust number 300, When Good Taste Goes Bad.
I'll start the insurance paperwork. And the sequel.
What's that mean, and the sequel?
I don't know. That's, what does he mean by that?
I don't know.
Okay.
Moving on. I'll pour the sherry. No sense wasting a bottle.
To Jean-Pierre, may he rest artistically.
Amen. And may his next unveiling be handled with a gentle touch.
The storm eases. And everyone relaxes, until Ben notices one detail the murderer forgot to tidy.
Oh, it's nice that Detective Inspector Ben is finally doing some police work. That's good.
That's odd. These bolts, they weren't just loose. They've been sawn through.
Sawn? That's overkill for a curtain adjustment.
Exactly. Prudence, you don't carry a saw, do you?
Of course not. I carry standards, not tools.
A shame. A woman who knows her way around a tool is really to blame. I mean, he's got proper carry on now. Then who does own one?
The only man who said he catalogued the pedestal's dimensions?
Maintenance is part of risk management.
You loosened the bolts earlier, knowing Prudence would fuss with the rope. She gave the fatal tug. You got the insurance payout ready.
Forward planning, it's practically a virtue.
You dull little sociopath.
And I thought I had a thing for tight budgets.
I think you're overacting it with the noise. Right.
You framed her beautifully, Arnold, but you slipped. These insurance forms by the pedestal are signed yesterday, claiming for damage that hadn't happened yet.
Efficiency is no crime.
It is when it's premeditated. Arnold Whitman, you're under arrest for the murder of Jean-Pierre Leclerc and for attempting to frame Headmistress Worthington.
Very well. I'll prepare my confession in triplicate, or with footnotes, of course. Add an appendix on temptation. It'll help the sermon series. Whimsy Manor, where paperwork kills faster than statues.
Brilliant. That's my episode title.
Reverend, escort our accountant to the vestry. Don't lose him. He blends in with wallpaper.
I'll keep him close. I'm very good at conversions.
I suppose I owe you an apology, Inspector. Why does she have...
She's been falsely accused of murder. Why does she
have... Surely the other way round.
Okay.
Not at all. You tidied the scene. He designed the mess. A true collaboration.
All drink to divine teamwork. And preferably something with a full body. And to statues that stay upright.
The storm drifts away, the culprit's caught, and Whimsy Manor stands quiet again. Proof that sometimes the dullest man in the room makes the deadliest plan. Justice rings softly like thunder at a distance.
Well, Well, there we are. And wasn't Arnold Whitman the murderer last time round?
I think he may have been, but I did give Giselle full license to randomise the killers and whatnot, and she decided to go down the exact same route, but
yeah.
I'm not that mad about it. I still enjoyed it.
I mean, that tells me that that's more reason to distrust AI. AI clearly has a problem with sort of accountants and those that deal with the minutiae of business. Another mystery is unfolding before our very eyes, Ben.
I did enjoy the swerve that we were led down the garden path to believe it was coming to a conclusion, and it was Prudence Worthington who was the murderess.
Yes, yeah, that's where we were heading, and then bang, twist. That's the key to a murder mystery, isn't it? You don't see it coming.
I thoroughly enjoyed that.
You don't see it coming.
Also, I got to point out again, I know I highlighted it earlier, but Prudence, Headmistress Prudence Worthington, has been a bit of a snob the entire thing. She thinks she's better than everybody. Everyone's sort of scum and sort of substandard to her high standards. She basically said that her piece of art was, or the piece of art was, worth all of your pensions combined. So she's been quite snobby. And the one moment she does have genuine grievance and has the right to be a little bit pissed off, she apologises to me for falsely arresting her.
I know. I mean, that seems to suggest that she's beginning to show signs of some kind of senility, doesn't it? Well, there we are. That's it. Before we go, as always, we will finish with some recommendations. But this time, Ben, I thought we'd recommend not something we've watched recently, just the best thing, the best film, the best TV show, your favourite thing, or maybe the worst thing if you've got something that can always sit in cautionary corner.
So this was a lot of pressure on me, and my answer might not be entirely as unpredictable as you might think. Basically, I came down to what is my go-to comfort, best show of shows, the thing that I love the most. And there's a lot of strong contenders in there. There's The Office, the US Office, Only Fools and Horses, Fawlty Towers, all of these classics. However, I think, Trev, you know what I'm going to say. It's Frasier.
Yes.
If you have never seen Frasier before, or even if you've seen it years ago, pick it back up, watch it from start to finish. For me, it is the best written show of all time. I include things like Breaking Bad, anything you can think of which you think is the best thing ever. I think Frasier is superior to all of it.
Yeah.
In a bizarre twist of fate, the thing that I would recommend in Cautionary Corner is Frasier. The dreadful, piss-poor reboot. Avoid it like the plague. It's one of those things, like a lot of people got very much upset when they brought back the all-female cast of Ghostbusters. Don't worry. A, sexist, but B, don't worry, you still have the original. Just because there's a shitty reboot that was awful doesn't take away from the original existing. It doesn't delete it, it's still there. But avoid the shitty Frasier reboot like the plague.
I agree with that. I'm rewatching the original Frasiers at the moment because I went through a phase of just giving it a break because I was watching them on loop for years, and I thought I'm going to give them, so probably about a year since I've watched any of the old Frasiers, and I'm just watching them again, and it's like coming back to an old friend.
It really is.
You've never seen, some people, you know, young people listening might not know what Frasier is. Find it. It's on all, Channel 4 has it all. Just watch it.
Amen.
For me, I'm going to recommend two of my favourite films of all time. It's difficult, isn't it, to say what your all-time favourite film is, because it does tend to change. But the two films that are up there for me always are The Elephant Man. I do think that is probably
really
my favourite film of all time.
I'm not sure. Honestly, if I'd sat here till Christmas guessing, I'm not sure I'd have ever guessed that for you.
Well, it's a film that I return to probably once or twice a year.
Really?
I absolutely adore that film.
I am not an animal! I am a human being!
It's a great film, Ben, and there's lots of
questions. Just for clarity, was that a clip you just played to me, or was that...
That's my very incredible impression of The Elephant Man. if you've never seen it, I was trying to explain to somebody recently that it's one of my favourite films of all time, and this was a younger person. They saw, it's an old film, it's black and white. Well, it is black and white, but it's not, I mean, it is an old film now. It's 1980, I think, but it was made in black and white on purpose. And so I think you've got to look at it from that artistic viewpoint, but there's nothing wrong with black and white.
No. So I'm very curious what your second favourite film is.
Well, it's a film I haven't watched for a long time, but I've had a hankering to watch recently, and I realised how much I love it. It's the film Harvey, the 1950 film with Jimmy Stewart, who has his, well, is it an imaginary 6-foot rabbit friend, or is it real? Interesting. But it's just a brilliant film, and Jimmy Stewart's performance. Oh, Jimmy Stewart! It's Harvey. It's a brilliant performance.
Was he also in The Elephant Man? It sounds very similar.
I think you can rent it on Amazon and YouTube and Apple TV.
What's the gist of it? Because I've heard of it, but not
a
sure.
Man is deemed insane by his family when he has conversations with a 6-foot-tall rabbit. But it may not be a figment of his imagination after all. And Elwood P. Dowd is the main character, and he's just this likeable man. He's an alcoholic, sadly, and and his sister, and I think it's his niece, basically want him sectioned.
This sounds like a barrel of laughs.
It's a lovely film. So that's out there as one of my favourite films. Going in cautionary corner, I really need to think about this. But there are two films that came to mind that are up there as the worst films I've ever seen. I did think Citizen Kane's up there, but too many people argue with me about that. So that is staying out.
Isn't that supposed to be... I've never seen Citizen Kane, but isn't that supposed to be sort of an iconic classic?
Yeah. Oh, it's fucking awful. I mean, it's so boring. It's so boring. I mean, I think cinematically it broke boundaries, but it is the dullest film. I've watched it twice. I thought I'd give it another go because I thought I'd watched it once, hated it, and I thought I'll give it another go. Maybe there's something I've missed. I hated it just as much, so I'm sorry. People argue with me, but that's not what I'm putting in, right?
Okay.
People get upset when I talk about that, so... I mean, they might get upset with this because, again, it's supposedly one of the best films of all time, but Raging Bull...
you're going to upset loads of people!
Oh, fucking dreadful film. I watched that really excited once, thinking this is going to be brilliant. You know, it's a Martin Scorsese film, De Niro's in it, Joe Pesci's in it, Jake LaMotta, what a cast. Oh, Jesus Christ, it's dreadful. So that's going into cautionary corner and staying there. This is like room 101.
Whoa, you're going to... Jesus Christ, what a bombshell to put in cautionary corner on the last podcast. Jesus, that is going to be controversial. You're going to start fights with that one.
Well, it's in there. And the other one that's going in is a film I watched fairly recently, Sisu. That film about someone taking revenge on the Nazis. Absolutely dreadful film. Basically, I'm telling you, this is my parting gift to people as we leave for a while, is that just avoid these films. They're dreadful.
Well, this is embarrassing because I think I recommended that to you on this very podcast.
You did, because I seem to remember when I originally put it in cautionary corner, you reminded me that you'd recommended it, and I told you that I thought it was absolute horseshit.
So it's so bad, in your opinion, you've put it in cautionary corner twice.
Yes, it's condemned. That's it. So there we are. That's it for the Trevor Ben podcast for now. Our plan is to be back in 2026 with maybe a slightly new format. We're still discussing the minutiae of the project, but you're not getting rid of us forever, but we will have a little break. Stay on our feed. Don't unsubscribe, because one day, what a lovely surprise it will be when one day in 2026, when you've forgotten about us a little bit, you'll just get a little pop-up, new podcast. Just think how the mariachi band in your head will kick in, and what a lovely moment it will be.
There's the would you rather we've never thought to ask. Would you rather Trevor Ben shut up forever or come back next year with a new format and try again?
I think it's a question we've always been too afraid to ask. So before we go, I just want to thank you. If you've listened from the start, some people have been with us from the very start of this, Ben, and we appreciate that immensely. But wherever whether you've listened to a few, to all, thank you. Thank you very much. And as Ben said at the start, we know there are better podcasts out there. We know there are funnier people than us out there. But all we've ever wanted to do is just we've made you smile a bit, our job's been done.
I'd like to echo those thoughts. I'm incredibly grateful for anyone who's bothered to hit the play button and listen to us and give us the time of day. We will be back. It's not the end of us, but immensely grateful for your support over the last 6 years.
So there we are. You can always stay in touch with us. We're at Joe and Ben on X and on Blue Sky, and we will catch you again sometime. But till then, stay safe, stay well, take it easy.
Bye.